That's what yesterday we were talking about. Two halachas that are derived from the same pasuk, Parofi, Tarefi, V'Eoei. That it says that under normal circumstances, when there's a lack of clarity, what happened exactly? Why can't the shoma produce the animal back? So the shoma claims because it was stolen, it was destroyed by a lion, etc. Different times that were exempted. Normally, the Torah says Shmos Hashem to verify the story if you get the Shmos. Nevertheless, the Torah tells us two halachas that qualify that statement. Number one, if the shomer, rather than taking the Shmos, wants to bring Edom, that's also okay. Edom can prove the story even better than the Shmos. And number two, if there are Edom that are available, it's in a place where Yeshua, it's a place where there are a lot of Edom available, then the shomer no longer has the option of taking the Shmos, that he has to bring Edom. 99% of the time, Shmos Hashem Tishmashem. But if and when there are actually Edom that we know for a fact are around, then you must bring Edom and you can no longer take a Shmos. We had to discuss yesterday this question concerning this halacha. The fact that the Torah tells us that if there are Edom around, you must bring Edom, and if you can't produce the Edom, then you're going to lose the Torah. You're going to have to pay. Shmos is not an option. Yes, it tells, why doesn't the Shomer win the Torah? With a simple mego, that believe him to say the animal was stolen, believe him to say the animal was eaten by a lion. Mego, he could have said one of two things. Either he could have said, Bahayu's Barbion. He would deny the case entirely. He said, I never was a showman in the first place. I never saw it. I never got the animal in the first place. And if he would have done so, he would have been believed. Or number two, mego, the authority. Mego, that yes, I was a showman, but I returned the animal to you already last week. So either one of those claims would have been acceptable. Neither of those claims would have been supported by a shvuah. Those are both examples of classic kol for a kol. And just as the shomer would have been accepted to claim one of those two claims, we should accept his word as well. Therefore, how can it be that the Torah says you have to pay if you can't find a day? What do you have to pay for? So we took the Tzelsa and said, wait a second. Is that a question? That what the Tzelsa is asking the question is this limited, wild scenario of shvuah shomerim that there are Edom around. What about every Shmos HaShomer? He asked the same exact question, any and every Shomer, every Dintar of a Shomer. I say to you, where's my animal? And you say it was eaten by a lion. I say, swear. The next word is out of your mouth. Shouldn't it be a Shua? The next word should be Migo. You should say, what do I take a Shmos? Believe me that what I'm telling you is true. Migo, I could have said, Migo, I could have said, I returned it. So only when we understand the reason why that Migo is not good, then we have a fighting chance to answer the Tzelsa's question. So we took a whole 10 steps back. And forget about our case now. Forget about the wild case of Edom. Every single Shomer, every case of Ash Mishpatim, every Mishnah, the Tarecha Mafkir, Brother Shoel, I say to you, where's my animal? And you say, it was eaten, it was stolen, and I say, it is Shua, and you say, Migo. Why doesn't that work? What happened to Migo? So we pointed out at the end of the shiur yesterday, this is not our question, this is not the Tzelsa's question, it's my question. The Gemara in Shmuel asked the question, but the problem is, the Gemara gives what appears to be such a difficult answer. The Gemara says, I'll give you a case where there's no Migo. Don't bother me. The Gemara says, how come I skin there's no Migo? Why is there no Migo? There were Edom who saw the animal being given in the first place. And there was a shtar, and therefore there's no way you could say that he returned it without having ripped up the shtar. I'll give you no kimta, I'll give you hokhal ma'eskina, that there's no migo. So the Rishonim were very, very bothered with the Gemara because it doesn't sound from the Pesukim Mishpatim, doesn't sound from Mishnayis, and the Tech HaShvuot and Mamitzia, doesn't sound from multiple Gemaras, that any and every case the Shvuot HaShomer is talking about, there was a shtar, and there were Edom, that doesn't sound the way at all. So it sounds like the Gemara is just almost like being doch and saying, you think there's a Migo? I'll tell you there's no Migo. You think there's another Migo? I'll tell you there's no Migo. But in his heart and soul, the real answer, we have to search other places. We really look and figure out why conceptually, not just technically, but why halachically conceptually, Migo failed us over here. So what is the deficiency of this Migo? What is wrong with this Migo? When I say, where's my animal? And you say it was stolen. You should be believed outright. Migo, you could have said, you never had it in the first place. Migo could have said, returned it. So then the ninth of the Memekomos, the Rush quotes from the Rima Gash, so we left off yesterday, quotes from the Rima Gash, with the following tremendous chiddush. Ninth of the Rima comes with Shavuos. V'yod kasav, the lo amrina nigo le'ifture mishvua ela le'ifture mimamon. Comes the Rima Gash and says, the entire institution of Migo, even though we use Migo right and left in multiple sugyas and shas, Any and every time that Migo applies, Migo works liftor mimamon. Migo never works liftor mishvua. Migo works when the alternative is to pay money. I say you owe me X amount, and you would have to pay. And the response that you give is not a valid response. It's not a claim that's acceptable, but you have a Migo up your sleeve. So since you have a Migo on your side, that Migo exempts you from an otherwise chiyuv mamon. Says the Rebbe Gash, we're not talking about mamonis here. We're talking about shvuas. Here the dintar is revolving around, do I have the right, do I have the ability to make you take a shvua? Says the Rebbe Gash, Migos from today till tomorrow. Cloud well of the Rebbe Gash is Migo liftor mishvua lo amrinan. Now comes the Rashi, continues to quote the Rebbe Gash. And the shvua shomer b'ikul mema migo. V'chein meida miktas. Says the Rebbe Gash, I'm going to prove to you that I'm correct. Every shvuas mode of a miktas should always get off scot-free because he has a migo. What's the migo? I say to you, you owe me $100. And you respond, sorry, I only owe you $50. The Torah slaps him with the shvuah. Share your mark you with that. There's a dim in the Torah that the kofar, the halfway kofar, has the mode of a miktas, has to take a shvuah. Ask the Rebbe Gash, why does he have to take a shvuah? Let's believe him and what he said at face value and exempt him from a shvuah. Migo, it could have simply been kafar akol. If I would have said, you owe me $100, and you would have said, I owe you zero, he would have gotten off scot-free. That's kafar akol is part of a shvuah. So when he says, I owe you $50, thank you very much, accept the $50 from him and say, Migo, that you could have been kafar akol, we should exempt you from a shvuah. Why don't you say that? Says the Rebbe Gash, you see from here, Migo lift of a shvuah layabrina. So the Rebbe Gash has now solved two of the dilemmas of Hilchoshom of Hilchoshvuas. There are only three Shvuas deraita, Shvuas the Mikdash, and Shvuas the Shomrim. And comes the Rebbe Gash and says that I'm going to solve these dilemmas. Why aren't these Shvuas exempted based on Migo? The answer is Migo lift of Shvuah Abinim. So we take a look at the next paragraph in the Rush, in the night of the Rebbe Kavos. So comes the Rush and says, Udvarav Einam Muvanim. He says, I don't understand it. The Chlal don't understand it. Why? Kevan de Migo de Araisu, Mali Mamon, Mali Shvua. He says, what's the difference? Does Migo work or not? Is Migo a valid Svar Min HaTorah? Now, we're not exactly sure what the source of Migo is. We don't know where Minonim Migo came from, but we find it in multiple places in Shas. It works Min HaTorah. It's clearly part of the parashah of Tidei Mamon is Min HaTorah. If Migo is the Araisa, why can't it work for Chashvuas? Mali Mamon, Mali Shvuas. Ata Shvuas, Mamonu. Zoom the below by Shavuas. Because, yeah, Mamona. So comes the Rush and he says that how can you tell me that Shvuas and Mamon are so radically different from one another? Every dintar of Shvuas will very, very quickly turn into Mamon. If you don't take the Shvuas, you're going to have to pay Mamon. So when I claim you owe me a Shvuas, that's tantamount to saying you owe me Mamon. So if you owe me Mamon, then why can't I get out of that chiyuv by invoking the principle of Migo? So the Rush says he doesn't understand the chlal with the Rebbe Gash meant. So there has to be another reason, another answer to this deep, dark secret. Why is it that a shomer doesn't get off with simply having a Migo? But we don't know yet the answer that the Rush is going to present. The Rush is going to give you an entirely different picture. Why Migo doesn't work by Shvuas Shomrim. But let's first see if we can analyze the Rebbe Gash. The Rebbe Gash started out by saying, Lifto b'shvua lo abrinan, and the Rush says, Mali mamam mali shvua.
How are we so sure Migo is the right step? We don't have a source for it.
Very good, excellent. So we do find it working in Dinei Torah. We find it working in cases that are otherwise chiyum de araisa. So that leads us to believe that it probably works in Torah. You're right, there is no outright source. You want to know, is it a smar ultimately? Is it a possible ultimately? Can we have work cut out for us? So again, so we have the Rebbe Gash, as you said, the Rush vehemently opposing it. Yeah, obviously, the Rush didn't have to offer another interpretation. We're not even up to that yet. We just want to understand the point of contention between the Rebbe Gash and the Rush. What is it about Migo Lichtam Shvuah that doesn't work? So the Taz in Chashem Mishpat suggests the following fascinating insight into the Rebbe Gash. And it's part of a principle we spoke a little bit about the other day, and it's almost part of a general global Torah picture. Maybe very, very often, the Torah tells us we have latest asafas. We have a suffer in life. We're not sure what to do. I've said over many times that Sveikis are part of life. That's where the Bach comes and says to me, I have to know with certainty, you know, what I'm going to do in life, and I got to know what my major is going to be, and I got to know what I'm going to marry. Everything's going to be 100 million votes. I'm trying to say, listen, I said, if life was meant to be with absolute 100% certainty, we wouldn't have rogues, we wouldn't have chazokas, we wouldn't have aiden, it would be a deer of Adar. So the way we live in this world, we live in a world that's great, we live in a world where you have to have certain faith, and you have to figure out how to deal with faith, and how to overcome doubts in life. What do you do when you're in doubt in life? We hope that you're able to revive most of the fakers, but every once in a while we run into problems. We still live our lives with fakers. So comes the Taz and says, whenever we find this parasha, you have a suffering, and the Torah tells us a certain thing to do. The Torah tells you, here's the biru, here's the method of trying to figure out what to do. Whether that method is a rov, whether that method is a chazokah, whether that method is a erechon, whether it's a shua, half a dozen scenarios. The Torah says, this is what you have to do. Every once in a while, the Torah presents us with something that would otherwise constitute a valid proof, a valid clarification, but if we work a little bit harder, we could actually come up with something better. It means the option is available. If we just give in the extra, little bit of extra effort, we'll come up with an even better level of B-word. But what should our attitude be in these kinds of scenarios? Should we take the attitude and say, well, I got the answer ready, I fit, 59% chance, good enough for me. Or am I supposed to try to get a little higher? Am I supposed to take the attitude and say, true, you know, if I didn't have the option of being mivayar further, so the degree that I was mivayar would have been acceptable, the Torah would have sanctioned action based on that mirror, but I could up the ante a little bit, I could up the notch a little bit, I could do better than that. Does that concept exist in halacha or not? It says it does, but we have that concept right in our Gemara, right? And I did write in our sugya. What's the concept? We have a parasha called Shavuos Hashem Tiyaveh Shneihem. That we have a lady for suffering. Beis Din has a lady for suffering. They're not sure whether Reuven the Shomer tells the truth. Was the animal stolen? Was the animal not stolen? Was he pesher? Was he not pesher? We don't know. How do you provide that suffering? We have no way of knowing who tells the truth. So the Torah gives us a mechanism called Shavuos Hashem Tiyaveh Shneihem. The Torah says, let Reuven take a shvua. It's very, very unlikely Reuven's going to lie, even though we're not 100%. You know, trustworthy of him in terms of moment, but shuas, people get much, much more nervous about shuas. So we're pretty confident that if Reuven takes the shua, that's going to be a proof that that is in fact the truth. All of a sudden comes the Torah and tells us, wait a second, in Tarofi Tarefi Yehweh, if there are Edom around, remember we spoke about yesterday, if the claim took place in Times Square at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we turn around to Reuven and we say to him, Reuven, we're not going to accept your shua anymore, you have to bring Edom. You have to bring Edom for. A minute ago, we said the shvua was valid. When the case happened last week and the claim was put forth that the animal was stolen in the dark of night, in the middle of the night somewhere, and there were no Edom, so we said, okay, shvua's jump to your bench. Now, we trusted Reuven wholeheartedly. If we trusted Reuven wholeheartedly last week, why can't we trust Reuven wholeheartedly today? What's the difference? It's the same, here by the same time, it's the same shvua's Hashem. So why don't we trust Reuven now? The answer is because we could do better. How can we do better? We could bring Edom. And the hierarchy of Birur, the hierarchy of clarification for Beis Din's purposes, you can't get better than Edom. That's the top of the top. That's the gold standard of clarification. Shmuel is down there somewhere. It's it scores an 80, but an Edom, that's 100 plus. That's an A plus. That's the highest of the high. Comes that law and says, Shmuel is okay. But you can do better. If you can do better, then you better do better. That's the parish of Tzadzeret Yisraeli. Comes to Taz and makes reference to the fact that we even find this idea in the realm of Issachar had there as well. We sometimes have a situation where something we have a latest of something, and we're able to apply certain principles of halacha that leads us to believe that this and this are the facts, that we're comfortable with making the following assessment. But all of a sudden we realize we could do better. So the halacha says, if you can do better, it's easy to do better, then you have to do better. Where do we find this in the Mishnah? It's the Gemara Pesachim of Dalam and Aleph. The Gemara Pesachim of Shaila. Where a person rents a house on Erev Pesach. Come Erev Pesach, 10 o'clock in the morning, I rent the house from somebody, and I forgot to ask the person whether he was buying the chametz the night before or not. Now the guy walked out. I'm trying to figure out about maybe I have a chuyf to bdikas chometz. There are pesach chalav. Stop everything and can't do bdikas chometz. Can I assume that the person probably was burning the chometz that he was supposed to the night before? Not. It was back and forth and back and forth. We're raising the suffix. Do we say that I call that mother, I call Chaver Metzel B'dikas Chavetz? Do we say if he's a from Jew, so he probably did what he was supposed to do, he probably did the proper B'dikas Chavetz, and there's nothing to be worried about? And then I say, no, maybe the guy wasn't, so, you know, so he knew he's renting the house off tomorrow, he's on his way away from Pesach, he doesn't want to be bothered with him, maybe he didn't do it, so he must have, you know, back and forth. Is it a good, is that a good robe, is that a good assumption that the person probably was letting come into that? So the Gemara says, Lamai Nafkamina, the Gemara asks, what's the difference? The Shaila, ask the guy. That's the Gemara Shaila. Ask the fellow whether he's letting come into that. The Gemara says, you're right. If he's there, you better ask him. Oh, my skin, the lady said, come on, he left her in. He already said goodbye. He's off on his Pesach program. I'm now in his house, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, did he check or did he not check? So come to Rishayim and say, why did we ask the Rishayim? Why did we ask the fellow? If we really can, if that thought is correct, that Rome people really do the biggest covenant, and we can be, when we're comfortable with that and prove positive, if the guy disappears and he's not around to ask, we will be comfortable with that, and we won't make you do another biggest covenant. If we're comfortable with that level of clarification, why bother even asking him? Even if he's standing in front of me, why do I have to ask him? And the answer is very simple. We are comfortable with that level of clarification based on the robe. The odds are most people are from Dubai because coming to the right time. We are comfortable with that when we have nothing better to go on. But if we have something better to go on, then the book stops here. You cannot just say, well, he probably did. Probably. You can ask him and get further clarification. You get 100% proof. Why do you have to rely on 85% proof? So you see, both the realm of Issa Veheter, ask him. For the first question, let's ask him. And you see from the din in our sugya that when you have the option of bringing Adim, so all of a sudden Shmu is no longer acceptable, but there is a concept in Allah of hierarchy of Iruim. So comes the task and says, that's the same thing that's playing out over here. We have a din Torah, and we're trying to figure out whether Reuben owes Shimon money or not. Reuben's claiming such and such claim, and we don't really like his claim. His claim objectively is not really acceptable, and Shimon should get the upper hand. But all of a sudden, Reuben pulls down his back pocket. They have amigo. You have amigo. Oh, amigo is something in the arsenal of Bezdin to figure out who's telling the truth. If I would have wanted a lie, I would have lied. It's a different lie. Therefore, I'm probably telling the truth. Whatever it's based on, whatever the smart, whatever the logic of amigo is, it's one of the mechanisms of Bezdin to figure out what the truth is. Comes Halach and says, when Reuben has amigo on his side, so he has proven to Bezdin such and such. He has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that he is telling the truth. Oh, wait a second. Comes through Magash and says, that he's proven when there's nothing else he can do, when there's no other level of proof that he could possibly present. There are no Adim. There never were any Adim. But in these unique dimensions, where Bezdin has something else up their sleeve, namely Shvus Hashem Tivin Shneyam, a case of Shvus Hashem, or a case of Reidim Amikdas, where the Torah gives us another level of proof. On the hierarchy of proof, Shvua is a better proof than Migo. Adim is the best. That's why if you have the ability to bring Adim, then the Shvua is meaningless. So Adim is up there. That's the top, tippy top of hierarchy as a proof. Then underneath Adim is a Shvua. And way, way down the bottom is Migo. So yeah, Migo works. At the end of the day, we have a Din Torah, and we can't prove any better. So we will accept the degree of proof of Migo. Migo is most probably a proof that he's telling the truth. But if you can do better, then you better do better. And you have to migo lift the shvua. We're not going to let you get away with a mere migo to exempt you if and when you have the option of a shvua. You don't always have the option of a shvua. Most dinei Torah don't even lend themselves to shvua. We can't just make up shvua just like that. But if there's a pre-existing shvua satayra, shvua shavtiya ben shneim, or asheyo makiyuzah, shvua smaydin mitzvah, those shvuas are on, they're within the realm of days that administering those shvuas, we will insist on administering the Shavuot, and we will not fall back necessarily on a mere amigo. So that's the view that the Taz gives, B'das the Rimbagash. Well, the Mishnah, the Rush didn't buy this. The Rush wasn't Mishach, it wasn't Gerus, this whole story. The Rush says, what are you talking about? Verb in Muvanimli. He says, I don't understand the whole thing. He says that if amigo works lift of Imam, amigo should work lift of Shavuot as well. So what do you do with the two proofs of the Rimbagash? If the Rush is correct, so back to square one, back to the original question, so why doesn't every Shomer get off with a Migo? Migo, I could have said, I never got the animal in the first place. Or Migo, I could have said, I returned it. Why isn't every Maidim and Mitzvah get off with Shua? Migo, that I could have been Kaifrak. Oh, comes the Rush and explains to why he thinks the real reason is, not the Rimagash's reason, why the Emerson reason is, We take a look back at the rush in the second paragraph. The second paragraph of the rush towards the end of the second line. Hakvar Kasvina Liel, the Migal de Ha'ozahabe. He says that this Migal falls short. You know why this Migal falls short? Because it's what's called the Migal de Ha'ozah. When the words Migal de Ha'ozah, Meyer, means like we have a chutzpah. What is Migal based on? What's the premise of Migal? Reuben walks into the basin and puts forth the following claim. Puts forth claim A. Basin listens to claim A, and they say to themselves, this is ridiculous. Claim A sounds like it's Tvar Batel, sounds like Shechem Chazan. He has nothing to say there. So we're about to say, Reuben, you have to pay money. And all of a sudden, Basin realizes, wait a second. Reuben could have said claim B. And if he would have said claim B, so then he would have been believed to say claim B. We have to start scratching your head and asking ourselves, so why did he say it? If he's really the shachman, if he's really the liar that we think he is, why did he say a better lie? There's a cloud level in life when we assess liars. If you're going to lie, you're going to lie the best possible lie. Even for Askar, if you're already lying, you might as well say something lie that's going to make sense. You might as well make some money off the lie. Stop the lie and lose your money. You're a shachman and you're a fool. So comes the halacha and says that if you could have said B, if it's possible for you to say B, and you would have been believed to say B, the fact that you did not go down that route, the fact that you went down the route of A, that leads us to believe you're probably telling the truth. But in your heart of soul, you're Ish MS, you probably are telling the truth. Even though objectively we didn't really accept A, but we will accept A, legal that you could have said B, because the mere fact that you could have, the very fact that you could have lied and chose not to lie and chose to give a taina that is not really acceptable in Beis Din, that itself is a hochacha gadolah. That itself is a tremendous fear. That itself is a proof positive that you're probably telling the truth. That's the simple ABCs of Migo. If that's the case, then whenever we formulate a Migo, we have to be very, very careful how we formulate it. We have to say as follows. Since I could have said B, believe me to say A. You have to add a word to it, or add a phrase to that. Since I could have just have easily said B, and I didn't, then I'm believed to say A. If there's some impediment here, there's some obstacle here, there's something that is preventing me from saying B comfortably and happily, and then the whole Migo just fell in the wayside. The whole Migo is predicated on the assumption I have two equally, legitimate titles in my mind, so to speak, to say. I could say A, could say B, and easily could have said the truth. And I didn't say B, then A is probably the truth. But if there's something that's stopping me from saying B, there's a reason why I'm edgy to say B, I'm sweating to say B, I'm nervous to say B, enough for like I said, enough for this, and the entire Migo is undermined. There's the rush. That's where the principle called Migo the Ha'azah kicks in. Migo the Ha'azah means B is not a very comfortable time. B is a squirmy kind of a time. B is a time up. In theory, I could have said it, but I would have been sweating bullets in order to say it, because there's something very wrong about B. What's wrong about B? It's a chutzpah to say B. It's a ha'azah to say B. What does this mean? Comes the shomer, it has to respond to the maski. The maski says, where's my animal? So now the shomer is thinking quickly. He has two paths to go. Either he can go down the path and say, it was stolen, or he can go down the path and say, I don't know who you are, never met you before. Which is the more comfortable of the two? There is no question that to say it was stolen is much, much more comfortable. Why? Because the maskin has no idea whether it was stolen or not. So for the shomer to say, I'm so sorry it was stolen at 2 o'clock in the morning, the shomer doesn't have to become a chutzaf. He doesn't have to sweat. He doesn't have to say something which is very, very troubling to say. For the shomer to look at the maskin with a straight face and say, I don't know who you are. Maskin say, you don't know what you're sure, you're crazy, you don't know that. We grew up together. What do you mean you don't know who I am? Well, how you tell me? What do you mean? What do you mean? But the Rishonim say, Halo Makir Bashikro. The maskin is looking at the shomer and screaming at him and saying, you're a liar, shocker. In the case of where the fellow says that the animal was eaten in the middle of the night. The maskin is not saying you're a chakra. The maskin says, I don't know what happened, the maskin says, but Shvosrim Tirashem, I have the right to insist that you take a shvur to support your claim. But the maskin is not looking at the shomer and about to attack him. But when the shomer says a thing like, I never took the animal, The market look at him, you're a liar, you're a shocker. Of course you took the animal. I know you took the animal. But when the shomer says, oh, I returned the animal, so the Malkit says, no, you didn't. I've been around for the last month. You never gave my animal back. I know you have my animal. So any time that the claim that the Baldover is building his nigo off of involves a degree of ha'aza that undermines the very nigo in the first place. Ain't other made fun of. First, generally speaking, people are generally not chutzpah. We hope people are generally not me'izim, and therefore people feel much more comfortable to lie rather than to present a case that would have otherwise been ha'aza. Therefore, the entire nigo falls by the wayside. Says the Rush, that's why Shmuel Shomim is not covered by nigo, because to invoke nigo would have been a violation of the klal of nigo ha'aza. What about the case of Kofar HaKol and Moser Mitzvahs? So what was the Rebbe Gash's other proof? He says every Moser Mitzvahs should get off scot-free. Why did the Moser Mitzvahs make a shvua? He should be believed with a nigo. What's the nigo? Nigo, it could have been Kofar HaKol. Comes the Rosh, and the Gemara may even say this also, it says, no. For a person to be Kofar HaKol, it's a very, very uncomfortable statement. That's a ha'aza. Halo macha b'shikro. For me to say, I never saw you, I never met you, I know who you are, I never borrowed, never took a dime from you, that's a tremendous degree of ha'aza. For you to say to me, I lent you 100, I say, you only owe me 50, that's not such a ha'aza, because, you know, the other person says, you know, maybe he's right, I thought it was $100, can't seem to remember. Was it 100? Was it 50? I'm not quite sure. That's a much less of the degree of ha'aza. So when a person offers the claim, a million of a mitzvah, we can't say, oh, let's believe him. He must be telling the truth because he could have just as easily have been kosher b'kol. Not true. It's not just as easily. It's much, much more difficult, much, much, much more uncomfortable. It's going to make him much, much more nervous to be kosher b'kol. And that's called the migah da'az. Migah da'az, all bets fall off. We have a major machlokes during the Gash and the Rush. Everybody agrees at the end of the day that the parashas are shvus hashem. Everybody agrees that the parashas shvus medivik. That's a psukim in chumash. There's no question that these bali dover have to swear, and there's no question they're not going to get off scot free with the mere migo. Why not? What happened to chus migo? According to the Rebbe Gash, what happened to chus migo is migo lifted with shvul law. We never ever take on a taz with yourself because you could do better than that. According to the Rush, not true. That Migo is the Mishua Kena Mwinan. The only thing is that this particular Migo is a flawed Migo because it's the Migo Ha'aza. So these are the two major opinions of the Rishon to solve these two dilemmas. What happened to the Migo for Shvus Hashem? What happened to the Migo for Shvus Medin? These are the two basic solutions in the Rishon. Now, our job is to take everything we've just discussed and now plug this into the approach of the Ketos and try to address the issue of the Ketos raised. Ketos was not talking about a regular Migo, regular Shvus Hashomim. He was talking about a Shvus Hashomim that there are Edom around. And the Halacha says, if there are Edom around, you better pay the cash. Wait a second. If Ketos, you better pay the cash, what happens to Migo? We have to begin to analyze that Migo. Is that a good Kasha? Ketos? Bein mitav Rebbe Gash, bein mitav the Rosh. Hopefully, next month Friday, we'll try to put some of the final pieces of this puzzle together to appreciate and understand how to answer this dilemma of the Ketos.